The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back, and welcome to the show if you've just joined us. Where have you been? An interesting hour, which if you ever miss, you can catch up on our podcast, of course, available on our website around about 12:30 daily. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Greg, 21 houses got the go-ahead in Ballacdur beside your station. For a long time, water pressure is low at night. That is the Milford area. Good morning, Greg. Just wondering if you could help me. I'm looking for Crest toothpaste anywhere in Donegal. I can't find it anywhere at all. I phoned around and looked around everywhere and can't come across it. So I don't know why our listener is looking specifically for Crest toothpaste. Do you know where it might be sold across the county? Actually, this person is wondering where it might be sold in Donegal. Let us know on 086 60 25,000, and we can let our listener know. No Western politician will touch defending Gaza or calling out the genocide. They're all getting bribed by rich Israelis. Well, it's still a toxic point of view. You can come out in support of what's happening in that part of the world, opposing what Israel is doing, and face quite the backlash from it. So that is part of it. Israel is very clever in managing a narrative, PR, etc. And that's quite good. They're quite good at, I'm not saying it's good, they're quite good at sort of making it seem far more serious than it might be, opposing the genocidal situation, the genocide, and now the attack in Gaza in that part of the world. Hi, Greg. Had my water off on Tuesday night in Carrigarton and attempted to go on water.ie to find out why. The site for registration for text outage information was useless. Despite registering last year, receiving no warning text, on re-registration attempt, it wouldn't recognise my air code. I discovered the news on the Highland Radio website that there would be a water outage in the Downings area from 10:30 p.m. Wednesday to 7 a.m. Thursday. Arrived home at 6:05 p.m. to find water already off. What's going on? Ishka Aaron, uncontactable. How do I find the truth about water outages, and why haven't I received warnings despite previous registration? In addition, if everyone runs their taps at full flow for an hour after the water restoration, how much conservation results? I get you. I hope people don't run the taps for an hour afterwards. But I do understand what you're saying, because the water can be quite dirty and people might run some off. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't know. Maybe tons and tons of water is used overnight and it offsets. I can't imagine it's the case. I think you talk a lot of sense there, Carl. A caller says, I've no issue with anyone putting their name forward for president, but I'd like to see the Gaelic language being a necessity for standing. In what other country would their president not be capable of speaking their own language? It's an interesting point. I've no problem with that. I don't know what you think. I think being fluent in Irish might not be the worst prerequisite for president. Or what do you think? 086 60 25,000. I'll tell you. It would rule out quite a lot of very vocal nationalists down the country. My view is, scrap this position for president. It's a money-wasting position. Look at the president, €35,000 per year for his dogs. Never mind what he gets. It's a complete and utter joke. What's going on in this country, for God's sakes, and the country on its knees? But the country's not on its knees. We're raking in billions upon billions. We're raking in like $10 billion a quarter at times, more than we even thought was coming in. I just think we need to sort of realise there's a ton of money coming into this country, but it's not necessarily being spent to ease the difficult situation many people find themselves in. I understand exactly where you're coming from as well, but a head of state, every country in the world has one, and I think maybe the savings could be made elsewhere. $35,000 a year for dogs, that does annoy me. I think if you're going to be president and you have dogs, look after your dogs yourself. That's crazy. It's ridiculous, man. I think Pat the Colt Gallagher would be a fabulous candidate. I think it's important that our president is capable of speaking our native language. Also, Pat has class and is fluent in Irish. I think he'd represent our country extremely well, both nationally and internationally. It's a big no-no for Bertie, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you so much for that. Very interested in your opinions. Greg, can you ask Donegal Airport where is the appropriate assessment for use of these gas cannon noise machines in the Carrick Finn Special Area of Conservation. This is a legal requirement, as there's nothing environmentally friendly about these machines, and they're a torture to humans too. Thank you for your contact. We got on to Donegal Airport, as we do, because you asked us to, and their statement reads as follows. As part of our ongoing commitment to safety, Donegal Airport has recently introduced remote-controlled gas cannons on the airfield. These devices are a proven and environmentally friendly method of deterring birds and other wildlife from entering critical areas of the airport, helping us to reduce risks and ensure the safety of flight operations. Please be aware that the gas cannons will produce sudden loud noises at intervals throughout the day. This is normal and controlled part of their operation and is essential for ensuring safe conditions for aircraft operations. Maybe this is just the price of having an airport in your area. I think we've got very calm evenings, very little wind, very little sort of ambience noise. I wonder maybe the cannons, and it's easy for me to say because I don't have to listen to them, right? But I just wonder maybe the cannons are more impactful on a wider space because of the weather conditions. I'm not really quite sure. Just wondering, has anyone purchased a plug-in hybrid car? And to install the charger, after a video call site inspection costing €130, now to be told that ESB has to charge €200 for the upgrade of wires and an electrician has to be in attendance, another expense. When purchasing the car advertised as a free charger, which I've paid €300 for, which it will be refunded. But I was never told that there would be all these expenses and I had to change provider. Greg, has anyone else run into these problems? Thanks. So you're getting a free charger, but then it turns out that you're power infrastructure at your property needs upgrading. I get where you're coming from. This sounds a little bit like, you know, you've got an electric shower in one part of your house and then you try and install an electric shower in another part of your house and you can't if they're on the same sort of circuit because of the potential for overload. So the draw from PHEV must be quite high, and that's why you had to get your... I think really when they say free, they talk about they'll stick it on your wall and plug it into your house. And if you incur an expense after that, that's going to be your problem. And, you know, I'm not sure how many houses then require wire upgrades by an electrician. It's a complicated one. And you probably look at that and go, well, it's going to take me a while to save that up, isn't it? Right. Now, Jane and Peter McElhenney are in Port na Blah. It's their wedding anniversary. Enjoy the holidays from Karen, Jake and Simon. Hi, can you wish Aris O'Donnell Nursing Home all the best for their cake sale this afternoon? It runs from 2:30pm to 4pm. It's in aid of the Residents Comfort Fund. Please all welcome. So if you like your sweet treats and your cakes and what have you, get along to Aris O'Donnell Nursing Home between 2:30pm and 4pm today. You'll get some goodies to take home with you and enjoy, and you're raising funds for the Residents Comfort Fund. So a nice double advantage there. Going to be dry, calm and warm tomorrow as we head to Dunfanaghy Golf Club to take in the beautiful surroundings of a beautiful area. They have a special charity day whereby they are raising funds for Ronald McDonald House. We're going to be speaking to reps from Ronald McDonald House. Many of you have had to use their services at the most difficult of times in the past. Whilst it's Dublin based, unfortunately, at times we do need to avail of those facilities. So we look forward to that. Fair play to Sean and all the crew at Dunfanaghy Golf Club for what they're doing there. So we're going to be broadcasting from it. We have the usual stuff. We have our Friday panel, but it means we get to chat to people out and about from Dunfanaghy. We've got some live music as well. Those shows always prove really popular, particularly for those who like to watch. We always have bumper viewership for our OBs, which is great. So we look forward to that. And we also have the Cash Draw and John show tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to tell you more about that. But first, I want to get to Tricia. Hi, Tricia. How are you keeping?
Hi. Yes, I've been better.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation you find yourself in. I suppose I just want you to tell your story in your own words as much as you like, and I'll interject where necessary, but just outline, you know, who you are and the terrible situation you find yourself in.
Well, I suppose it goes back over 10 years when I separated from my husband and went looking for a council house. And every time I went in, there was more paperwork, and that would be it. And then next thing, there'd be another letter out. We need more paperwork, affidavit after affidavit after affidavit. The issue with me was that I had my name on the mortgage, but not on the deeds. So technically, the council viewed it that I owned property, even though I don't. And so then eventually I got approved for HAP, which is the housing assistance payment. So I was able to rent and everything was fine. I had one of my kids actually regularly in and out of Crumlin Hospital at the time, still is. So everything else went on the back burner because, you know, my house was sorted. And again, now you skip forward to here. The house I was in at that time, I had to leave, and I'm now in a different house, but again, still receiving HAP. My landlord here wishes to sell the property. Everything there is legal and above board and has been done in accordance with the RTB. And the issue I have is that at the moment, there are no houses. There are six of us here in this house. So we need, it's not that we need a rather large house. You know, we'll accept anything that we can fit into. We don't mind a squash.
What has the experience been over the last 10 years in terms of trying to acquire a council? As I presume there's lots of forms involved. Have you felt that you're getting closer to achieving that, or does it feel like it's always somewhat out of reach?
Always somewhat out of reach. Every time I'm told, get this affidavit signed, that'll be it. And then that affidavit will go in. Because don't forget, when each of these things go into the council, it takes months to get a response from them. And another line in the sand would then be drawn, and another line, and another line. So, like I say, eventually we spring forward to now, where I'm literally about to be made homeless. The council, eventually, I got onto my local politicians and everything like that. The council eventually agreed by the house that I'm in as tenant in situ. The sale of that fell through. Again, I'm not going to get into that because it's one side blaming another side, and I wasn't privy to any of the negotiations, if you know what I mean. I'm just sitting here watching from the sideline. And now I'm sitting again. I was told last Easter that that way it was Easter, it was Good Friday, I was told that the sale fell through, which left me for an entire bank holiday, long bank holiday, without being able to get in touch with anyone. And
I'd say there was a lot of hope in the house dashed on that Good Friday.
Yeah. Oh, that was a huge, huge blow, because we've been in this house, we moved in just before the COVID lockdown. So we've been in this house quite a while. We absolutely love it here, and we love the house, we love the area. And we were delighted that we were getting to stay and that we wouldn't have to move again. So that was a massive, massive, I can't even tell you what that did to, you know, the self-esteem, to the, you know, the emotional turmoil in the house was huge when we heard that.
Now, one option from here would be to move to another property if one were available and continue with your HAP payments. But there's another curveball being chucked in.
If you can find one, I'll move. You know, I have searched high and over the last 4 years, when I knew that my landlord wanted to sell this property, I have been searching for another. The big issue I have is that HAP themselves have rules and regulations about how big a house we're allowed to rent. So because there are six of us, we need a minimum 4-bedroom, and they would prefer a 5-bedroom. So they're like hen's teeth.
Of course.
You know, they HAP won't pay for a smaller house. You know, if I found a 3-bedroom house tomorrow, HAP won't pay.
Even if you say, look, the kids will double up, we can make this work, they're saying no, you have to hold out to get one of these hen's teeth 5-bedroom houses. I also see just in an email you sent to us that you were told that you were not on the housing list. Has that been rectified or is that still the case? How did that happen and how does that impact in terms of HAP payments?
I only found this out 2 years ago that I was never actually on the housing list. I contacted, like I said, the local politicians when my situation became so dire, and Pat the Cope went and spoke to the council and he came back to me and said, by the way, you're not actually on the council housing list, but you're getting half. And he says, how? I said, I don't know. And again, it turns out that because my name was on a mortgage, they stuck me into a grey area and kind of forgot about me.
Mm.
But again, I think the blame for all of this lies with further up the food chain. It's not my local office, because I genuinely feel that they have been trying and that they have been fighting for my case, if you know what I mean. Especially when I'm talking to the politicians who are also involved, because they seem to say more to them than they do to me. But further up the food chain, they don't seem to realise the effect that all of this bureaucratic red tape has on the individual, if you know what I mean. You know, right now I'm being told that there is a house being bought, possibly being bought. I'm not even too sure about that. But we're coming up to the beginning of the school year, and I don't know whether to organise a bus for my kids here. Am I moving? If I change the bus route halfway through, it's classed as a new application, and therefore they wouldn't be entitled to buses for the first term, and it's a mess.
Yeah, and you talked about the impact it has on the individual, but this is a family as well. So, you know, mm-hmm. the children, you can't insulate them from all of this. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, there are sort of medical issues there as well. So as it stands, you are facing homelessness, the six of you.
Yes.
When?
As it stands right now. My due date to leave this house is the 4th of November.
Mm. And it's uncertainty, isn't it? There's a possibility. But, I mean, listen, when you're in a house that you like and you think things are going really well for, you know, the mm-hmm. purchase and residency situation, and that falls through, and then you're told that a house might be being bought, you know, you're not going to put too much faith into that because your hopes have been dashed before, and you don't want to get the rest of the house's hopes up either. So you really are in a horrible purgatory with school time, hospital visits and everything else all chucked into the mix.
Yes, the new house that is supposedly being bought, I call that my unicorn.
Yeah,
I've been told it's there, but I don't know. And it is that, it's just not knowing and having no way to get the information. You know, there's no one I can call, there's no one I can contact, there's no one I can go to further up to fight my case, you know, because every time I look for a number, I'm automatically referred back to my local council. You know, and they are understaffed, undermanned, underfunded, under everything, and under a huge amount of pressure from the amount of people looking for housing and, you know, the total crisis, the total mess that is here. And I think that's, you know, what Dublin lacks is there's nobody looking at it. There's nobody actually coming and standing on the ground and looking at the impact it has.
Well, I want to go back to that. I want to talk more to that, because there's an emotional and physical impact as well. Our emotions, our stress and our physical health are all intertwined. You can demonstrate, you know, through GPs or whatever it might be, the terrible impact this is having on the whole family, as much as you're comfortable talking about that, because it's the often untold part of these stories. What is the impact on you and your kids?
The impact is huge. Because of the whole stress of it, a couple of weeks back, I had a small breakdown and had to take a week off work. My work is so supportive. It's the Dunluce Centre up in the Enid Cushlaw up in Dunluce here. And they have been so supportive of me and helping me through everything. And, you know, told me that, you know, regardless of what happens, my job is safe there, which, you know, is absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, I, you know, I had a breakdown. One of my children suffers migraines, and you know, I know that the stress of this has increased the frequency of her migraines. You know, I don't want to go into their details too much.
Understood. Because, but really, the point I'm trying to make, the last 10 years for you and your family has been one of existence, really, though, in terms of, you know, very little luxuries, no holidays, you know, treats few and far between. You've been existing, really, for the, as well as you working and trying to raise your children, get them to those medical appointments. It's an awful lot for one person to take on. And I'm delighted that you're getting the support from your employer and you have that little bit of reinsurance that you don't sort of, that's not another thing you have to worry about. But this is... Exactly. 10 years that you've had to endure, all of you had to endure, very little bright spots outside of obviously the love and support you have for each other, but you get where I'm coming from.
Oh no, I do, because at one point my youngest who attends Crumlin, she had to go up three times every year to three different departments. And, you know, again, anyone who knows the hospitals, they will never, never... put the clinics on one day. So, you know, there was at times where we'd be up maybe 3 weeks in a row and stuff like that. It was constant. You know, now she still attends, you know, between Letterkenny and Dublin. The ones with the migraines, the same. We're waiting on appointments again for her in Dublin. So we're going two sides of the country again. So everything, you know, I literally sort of bounce from one stress to the other. So I have to pick my moments to deal with my various stresses, if you know what I mean. So,
and you know the usual techniques we might use. Everything's going to be all right, kids. Yeah, I mean, those words will sound very hollow at this point to them. They've had to do a lot of growing up very quickly. Very as much as you've tried to protect them, they're going to say to you, "Mom, you said that 2 years ago, and here we are. We're going to be homeless now. Things are getting worse, Mom."
The blow of the house was huge because I turned around from that and said, "Oh my God, I said that's it. We're guaranteed. We're safe. We're never having to move again." That is, you know, pick a colour, get your curtains, you know, decide what you want to do with the room. The room is yours. You can do whatever you want with it. Paint it whatever colour you want. You know, put a nail in the wall. All of that. Luckily, we did not do any of that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, though.
But then to have to turn around and tell them, oh, actually, no, I was completely wrong. We're moving again. And now they're asking, you know, where? When? When will we know? And I just have to say, I don't know. I do not know. And it is, it's hard on everyone.
Yeah. I mean, in 6 months alone in this country, we had a 4.5 billion euro surplus. A 4.5 billion. That's a way, that's above and beyond what we were actually anticipating. The gross exchequer revenue for 6 months, last 6 months last year, 62.8 billion, up 8.1 billion year on year. You know, like, when you hear those type of figures being talked about and you hear government politicians talking about how, you know, we've got a really strong, robust economy, as someone who's lived here all your life, 55 years of age, you know, you should be able to enjoy work and watch your children grow and develop. It must really, like it does for thousands of people across the county, it must really, it must feel like, I hate the word, but gaslighting,
It absolutely sickens me, you know, when I hear about how well the country is doing and I sit there and I look at my own surroundings and I think, well, I don't see it. I do not see any of it.
What could happen? Is it confirmation of this house? Is it, you know, HAP saying, right, okay, listen, let's open up our search to 3 and 4 beds. What gives you some hope, Tricia, from a conversation like this, if you know what I mean? Because as it stands, it's still maybes. You know, one thing for certain, you're homeless and your 5 kids are homeless on the 4th of November. Homeless in this county, right? Let's not sugarcoat that. You're in this sort of grey area of not being in a housing list, but still entitled to HAP. HAP are looking at houses. They say, no, you need a 5-bed. You're saying, look at, you know, we can deal with a 3-bed.
The kids. HAP don't look for houses for you. You right. look for the house
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah, but in terms of yeah. what they will approve, sorry, I was yeah. just, but in terms of what, if you go yeah. back to HAP with a 3-bed house and you say this is perfect for us, will they entertain that?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
Yeah, but so that's the point I was making, yeah.
Yeah, and at this stage, you know, because a few people have approached me and said, you know, you should, you know, go out and try looking again. At this stage, I don't want another house where I get HAP. I want a house where the landlord isn't going to turn around at some point and say, do you know what? I really don't want that property anymore. I'm going to sell. Goodbye. You know, I want a house that I can call my own, that I'm not going to get kicked out of. Sorry.
Mm. But how does that happen? How does this situation progress from this phone call? Or do you feel it's more about getting the reality out there so people understand what's going on? You know, you've been in contact with the council, you've been in contact with local politicians.
Yeah.
You know, you've had national politicians raise the issue on your behalf. You know, what can happen now or between now and the 4th of November? You know, a house is not going to appear as such. I'm just wondering, you know, is there any assistance listeners can provide in terms of saying, I know a house such and such, or what, you know, I want to know what possibly positive could come from this conversation with you.
You know, I was really just wanting to highlight the struggle that is sitting under people's noses that, you know, they might not necessarily be aware of.
Mm.
Because, you know, I would have people coming to me, oh, what about this house? What about this house? Again, generally speaking, they're too small. You know, my hope is that someone will know a politician who can cut through some of this red tape. And, you know, instead of sitting up in the Dáil and saying we have to look after our most vulnerable members, to get up off their backsides and look at their most vulnerable members and realise that they're making their lives a lot more difficult. They are not helping at all.
I think, too, what local authorities need is, and I know this is a staffing issue, but they need someone that liaises with people like you, you know, so that yes, you don't that feel that your emails are falling on deaf ears, or maybe they just are deleted. I'm not saying they are, but sometimes if your emails yeah. go ignored or the phone, you know, someone that liaises with someone like you, and even if the news isn't fantastic, that you know exactly with what you're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's still news. You know, I'm aware of a disaster before, you know, I'm told, you know, I'm aware of, you know, and an issue coming up, you know, that's going to snag it, that's going to hold it up. You know, I'm not a completely uneducated person. I understand that, you know, when you're buying a house, when you're doing anything, you know, humans are involved. People change their minds. You know, that's all well and good. But, you know, for me to know beforehand, oh, this isn't going as well as we expected, you know, then I can prepare myself and be ready. So, yeah, to have somebody to liaise with would be absolutely brilliant. But like I say, they're understaffed. You know, I can't actually fault my local council. You know, I do know that they are trying, but their hands are tied from higher up in government and in policy.
Well, Tricia, listen, you know, I appreciate you sharing the story with us. I mean, you know, as I say, I'm not a mathematician, but this country is running a 25 billion euro surplus. And I know we can't rely on that because it might not. I've been hearing the same stuff for 15 years. We are the size of a city. We are equivalent to the size of not even a major city, a reasonable sized city with 25 billion surplus. And I can't understand, and maybe I'm incredibly naive, I can't understand how that money can't be best spent to lift as many people as possible out of situations like yours. As I say, it must be much more complex, but that's 25 billion over and above. Okay, listen, Tricia, love to all. I'm sorry, we can't really. The only way we end this phone call is if you feel that, listen, at least people know what's going on out there. Beyond that, maybe it might catch the ear of someone and something might come of it. What do you want to say finally, Tricia?
Just that I hope that nobody else finds themselves in the situation that I'm in, and that the more people who step forward and get loud about it and don't sit embarrassed about the fact that you're being made homeless. It's not your fault. This isn't my fault. And I think that's also, you know, the shame that can be involved in it is huge. It's massive. That's, yeah.
All right. Okay. Best wishes to you and the children as well. Thank you very much indeed, Tricia. Okay, welcome back. Do you like walking? Well, if you do, you're going to love this new book. It's 50 Best Irish Walks. Its author is John G. O'Dwyer. He joins me on the programme now. Good morning, John. How are you keeping?
Very good, Greg. Thanks for the invite.
No, it's lovely to have you on the programme. You've been a keen walker, an outside adventurer even, for quite some time now, haven't you?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Scotland in winter and that at one stage of my life, and I managed to come out of it in one piece. So I've always been a lover of the mountains and the outdoors and taking on a challenge.
The community of walkers is massive in this country. Those that do it as part of clubs in organised way, not just within Ireland, but travelling abroad. I don't think maybe everybody knows how significant that community is.
Absolutely. I mean, it runs up to hundreds of thousands of people. There's no doubt about that. And, huge friends are made there. And, you know, a lot of other clubs are very important as well. But the great thing here is that we'll say if you're in a golf club, it's much more expensive getting the golf club, getting the lessons. And then there's always the thing, it's competitive. So it can be a little bit stressful that way. Hill walking is great. It builds a great camaraderie. And the thing about it is, at the end of the day, everybody's a winner.
What do you enjoy about it most, though? Like, what I presume you go, excellent, right, I'm going for a lovely walk on Friday, I really can't wait. But what is it that you're looking forward to?
Well, actually, what I find about it is, and sometimes I just like walking on my own, because I write a bit, and it seems to me, for some reason, that all my best ideas come to me when I'm actually out walking. I also find it calming. And I say, if any of your listeners are speaking, if you think, you know, what your mood is like, say it's kind of a stressful day, and you say, well, out of 10, my mood is around 6 or 7. Go for a walk, and I bet you say, and come back just maybe even an hour and say, what's my mood like now? And it's more likely to be 8 or 9. I think you're always, but look out for that. I always get that. But I love scenery. And then, of course, in my book, which I have there, 50 Best Irish Walks, I try to get the stories that are associated with each walk as well.
Now, how do you whittle it down to 50? Are these your actual 50 favourite rambles, or is it your 50 favourite rambles sort of taken into consideration the broad geography of the country?
Well, I suppose you would need a bit of a spread, but no, it's what I think.
They can't be all around mid-Tipperary, is what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, there's a good lot there, all right. But that, of course, is in proximity, because I walk them a lot and I enjoy them a lot. But remember, I have quite a lot. Not only have I two in Donegal, but remember, it's easy to moderate walks as well. So if you were talking to 50 best walks in Ireland, you know, Errigal, which I was up there only about last year, you know, that would certainly be in the top 50 if it was all walks. This is easy to moderate, looking at the kind of the family market, the people who like a stroll. And then, of course, they're often at lower level, so you often have a very good story as well. But if you look another area there, I have Antrim in it as well. Fermanagh, just across there's the great story of the stairway to heaven in the Quilca Mountains. And, of course, I have Knocknarea just over the border in Sligo as well. So it's as good as spread, but I will think there is a bias towards Munster because I live there, and that's where you'll know the walks best.
And that is perfectly fine too. Just to give listeners an idea, if they wish to pick up the book, it's got beautiful pictures in it. It's got maps of routes, which I think, you know, sometimes there are people with certain personality traits, I think, that hold themselves back because, am I allowed to go there? Well, where do I begin? I want to do it, but, you know, they don't know the info. When you give them that info, you give them an approximate time of the walk, an approximate distance, how to get there, where it begins, and how suitable it is for them. So as you say, whether it's a very easy walk or one that's a little bit challenging, you know, and I think that makes it all the more accessible, John.
Yeah, I think the whole idea is that the countryside, the Irish countryside, despite what you see sometimes in headlines, has become massively more accessible. Because one time when I started off hill walking back in the 80s, really what you're speaking about is you had to be able to navigate and you could only go up the high mountains. Mm. Now there are low-level walks all over the place and there are literally thousands of them in the country. I had to whittle it down to 50. But what I tried to do is make the Irish countryside accessible. And I always think, from a lot of reasons, if you can develop the habit of going for a walk regularly, it's a gift that keeps on giving all your life.
I obviously am very lucky, as many people listening to this program are blessed with, you know, beautiful sea cliffs, coasts, coastal walks, the scenery. And that means for me, I get a particular, I'm not a massive walker, I'm not going to pretend, but I get a particular pleasure from walking in the woods, you know, like a dirt path through, you know, massive trees and sort of that different style of stuff. You cover all different types of walks, don't you? Your parkland, in inverted commas, to use that golf analogy, your forest walks, your Ireland walks, your coastal walks. There's something for everyone in there.
Yeah, and I think particularly, of course, then if you talk about my favourite walk, I love coastal walks. And of course, the two walks, Horn Head, that I have in, that wonderful cliff walk from Glencolum Kill up to the deserted village of Port, of course, those are cliff walks. And I love the visceral Donegal coastline. That's what attracts me. And not necessarily, not obviously when it's dangerous, but if there's a good strong wind and there's spray in your face and whatever, I always find actually a greater connection. But there are people who love the wood walks. And of course, down around then Tipperary and Munster, there are a lot of very, you know, beautiful walks there because it's a very much a landscape that supports trees.
Yeah, and listen, I think this is a lovely book for everyone. I'm not just saying that, but, you know, particularly people, outdoorsy people, those who maybe travel for work, those who go visiting family or just head for, you know, little breaks within the country, throw it into your glove box as well, because it is broken down by region and by county and what have you. And as I say, very accessible. And it gives people that knowledge and that confidence to sort of go and experience different parts of our most beautiful country.
Yeah, people are fascinated by what walks are in their own county. What I always say is more interesting. It's a glove compartment. Throw it in there. So you're Donegal people. You're in Mayo. You're down in Holidays in Kerry. You're over in Wicklow. Pull it out and pull out a couple of the walks there and go for them. I think it's making the countryside. Remember then, all these walks, you know where you're going. They all have uncontested access. You won't have an angry farmer coming out to you saying, why am I crossing your land?
Okay, it's 50 best Irish walks, easy to moderate. John G. O'Dwyer is the author. It's available in all bookshops and also from currabooks.com. So that's C-U-R-R-A-C-H, currabooks.com. Well done, John. Enjoy. Keep on walking.
And I'm telling you, I'm coming back up to Donegal for the wonderful Donegal Camino. I'll be joining on that, and I hope to meet lots of Donegal.
Brilliant. You might meet us. Are you doing all of it, John?
Or? I'm doing all of it. I'm doing the last few days. I'm coming up on Wednesday night and doing Thursday and Friday. I was there last year as well. Mm. It's a wonderful...
Caroline, what day are we doing? We're doing Thursday. We'll see you on the walk. We're doing the Aran Mór Island walk as well here. So we'll see you then, John.
We'll see you then. That's wonderful. Looking forward to it.
Take care of yourself. Goodbye. Okay. We're going to have to start talking about that a little bit more too. I'll sort that out for tomorrow. So there, John G. O'Dwyer is enthusiastic, and I love enthusiasm because I find it quite... I find myself quite open to it and gives me a lift. So that's 50 best Irish walks, easy to moderate. Glencolum Kill, Hornhead, what's featured in Donegal. But there's... so many people out and about enjoying. I do be jelly sometimes. I do be jealous. You know what? I was about to say that I don't have time, and that's a load of BOLL, because really, we all, for the most part, if we're blessed with good health to be able to get out, I have time. I just say I don't have time, but if the truth be told, I could organise things better or not sit in my arse as long or not watch that on the TV and go out and have a walk. So I do have the time. I just say I don't have the time as some sort of an excuse because I'm, I don't know, probably lazy. Anyway, I am going to make an effort maybe next year.